Well, from reviving Australian classic literature to translating our contemporary classics. Last night in Tokyo, a new series of Australian novels was launched, books that have been translated into Japanese. The first in the series is David Malouf's Remembering Babylon. The novel was shortlisted for both the Booker and the Miles Franklin Prizes, and it's the story of a boy who was partly raised by Aborigines, so he's a boy caught between two cultures. Well, to tell us about this project, about the translations, I'm joined by Australia's ambassador to Japan, Bruce Miller. Ambassador, thank you for joining us on Books and Arts Daily.
Good morning.
And also there in Tokyo is Australian studies expert Professor Kate Darian-Smith from the University of Melbourne. She's been involved with this and other cross-cultural projects with Japan for a number of years now. Hi, Kate.
Good morning, Michael.
Nice to be with you. Now, at the launch, Ambassador, you spoke last night. What sort of occasion was it?
It went very well indeed. Brought together a number of academics and cultural professionals, many of whom have a connection with Australia already, but there are also a number of people who are less familiar with our country and with Australian culture. So it was actually a good opportunity to get everyone together and get them interested in a great Australian novel and a fabulous Australian author. So all in all went very well indeed.
We have a strong relationship with Japan and we track Japanese tourists, so we've got trade and tourism. What's the level of interest or awareness in our arts and culture?
I think it's fair to say that there have been some very strong connections over many years culturally between our respective arts communities. But I would go on to say, though, that it is a very, very competitive field here in Japan. I mean, a lot comes in from in the cultural sphere from all parts of the world. So we have to make our way amidst what is a very competitive and vibrant scene here to promote Australian culture. But I think we've notched up some pretty good successes over the years here.
Kate, you and I have been university colleagues for decades in Australian studies, and I know that you've been promoting Australian studies overseas for 20 years. What can you tell us about Australian studies in Japan?
Australian studies in Japan has quite a long history. In fact, the first Australian Studies Centre opened here at Ottoman Gakuin University in the 1960s. So there is quite an established interest in areas such as economics and trade, obviously, but also in Australian literature, in art and culture. But of course, Japan is a big country, and I think, as the ambassador mentioned, there's a lot of competition, particularly in the field of literature. A lot of books translated from other English-speaking authors, Britain, the US. So I think Australia has to jostle a little bit to make itself, I suppose, known within universities and within the broader reading public.
Kate, I do remember that you edited a collection of short stories a couple of years ago. Who was that for?
I edited with a colleague, Professor Yasue Aramitsu from Doshisha University, a collection of short stories that were translated into Japanese, so Australian stories translated, that were concerned with issues of cultural diversity and immigration, multiculturalism, and these are of course issues of great interest in Japan, not just to the general public but to policy makers. Now that collection, which went under the title Diamond Dog, I think the extended title was Contemporary Australian Stories on Multiculturalism, attracted quite a bit of attention, including some quite significant reviews. And one of the stories that was translated was by David Malouf. So the same publishing company that published the short stories has moved to establish what they hope is a long-term series in translating contemporary Australian literature.
And Kate, is there a list of proposed titles?
We've been discussing some of the titles while I've been here, and I think one of the criteria from the publisher's perspective is, well, firstly, that these are works that are good literature, but also that they reveal something about Australian society, whether it is contemporary society or, like the David Malouf novel, looking back at the past. And certainly the names that we've been discussing include Kate Grenville, probably Tim Winton, perhaps Christos Tolkis, there's really such a richness of Australian authors to choose from that it's just getting the series and the translators set up.
I suppose the names you put at the top of your list are sort of obvious in a way. Ambassador, if I can ask you, you must have a sense as an Australian who speaks Japanese how the idioms issue will go. How will the idioms translate?
That's a very good question, actually. Obviously, translation is a tough exercise, trying to convey the literature of one country into something that is good literature in another language. That's a universal in translation. It's no more difficult, I think, to translate Australian literature into Japanese than it is to translate British, French, German, Chinese, Korean, for that matter. So it's just a question of getting a good translator who has a feel for literature and a strong command of their own language as well as of English to get it across. And I think we've achieved that, actually, with the translation of Remembering Babylon. We've got a very fine translator, someone who has a real flair for words in her own language. And I'm very confident we've got an excellent Japanese language version of this work. But that is the key to success in this market, getting good translations that are readable and out there. And we want to keep that quality up.
And Ambassador, what about the Aboriginal theme in the David Malouf novel? Do you find much interest in Australian Indigenous issues in Japan?
Yes, there is, actually. There's been for quite some time. I mean, there's a great interest in any ancient culture in this country, and Aboriginal culture certainly falls into that category. It's also something that is seen as particularly unique to Australia, and therefore is something that does attract a great deal of attention. Particularly in the arts world, I mean, we had a terrific exhibition 10 years ago of a Spirit Country exhibition funded by the Meyer family, which drew a lot of attention here. And then just 5 years ago, a standalone exhibition of work by Everly Kamikunaware, which attracted a huge amount of interest, more than 120,000 visitors, which was a huge success here in Tokyo because of the strong, I mean, obviously Aboriginal themes, but also the universal appeal of her work. In the same way, we can say that with literature, a strong Indigenous theme, but also having universal appeal is the key to success here.
Though this story, like others that could be on the list, addresses issues like frontier violence. I mean, the images of Australia in some books that you might want to propose, such as The Secret River, are not necessarily very positive ones. Is that an issue for the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade?
No, it's not at all. I mean, we're very comfortable with all aspects of Australian culture and literature being projected internationally. And I think it's a terrific thing for us to show that we are comfortable with that and that we are dealing with both the positive and the negative sides of our society.
So what's the next big cultural event in Japan, the Australian cultural event, Ambassador?
We have a long calendar of events, if you like. We've just recently had the Sydney Symphony Orchestra here for some terrific performances, and we also had the Australian Chamber Orchestra here in October. So I expect to see more of these high-level musical, arts and literature events over the year to come. A couple of them aren't quite yet at the final point. I can't really talk about what they are right now, but I'm very confident we'll have some really good things coming forward.
Australia is a multicultural country. A newcomer can become Australian. I think it's fair to say, though, that no outsider can ever become Japanese. Does that aspect of Australia, its diversity, its ability to absorb others, create any interest among the Japanese?
I think certainly it creates a lot of interest in a very general sense. And so far as Japan is confronted with a rapidly declining population and real issues with its workforce, insofar as most, close to 40% of the population is going to be retired when you roll the video forward 20, 30 years from now. So there are big issues that they have in dealing with their situation here, which brings to mind solutions or ways of doing things in other countries like our own that include migration, that include better ways of encouraging Japanese women to have children, and looking across to the ways we're seeing a lot of Japanese policymakers are looking across to the way that we do things in Australia. And I'm not saying we have everything perfect. We certainly have a different way of doing things, and there's been quite a good deal of interest in our approach.
Kate Derrien-Smith, what will happen next in order to bring more books online?
Well, the translations will start proceeding. The idea is to come up with one or two titles per year, so to gradually build up an impressive array of books. But also, it's about how those books are disseminated and discussed in universities and among the general reading public. And certainly having Australian literature available in Japanese is a very good start there.
Can you tell us a bit more about Australian Studies in Japan? How's it promoted?
Well, there's a very active association, the Japanese Australian Studies Association, that has several foci, if you like, of interest. One of them's literature, but there are also many scholars here who are interested in history, in politics, in economics. And that association meets regularly and has an annual conference and has a number of smaller symposia. So it's very active with a lot of activities. And that, in a sense, then filters into the universities where there are a number of courses in Australian Studies. There's also a visiting professorship in Australian Studies at Tokyo University that has existed for some decades, and that enables an Australian, a senior Australian academic, to come to the University of Tokyo for a year and teach a number of courses. So there are teaching, research, and I suppose broader cultural exchange activities happening really all the time.
And who's teaching those courses, apart from the visiting Australian professor?
Well, they're generally taught by Japanese scholars who have an interest in Australia, often have studied in Australia, and we mustn't underestimate, I think, in terms of developing Australian studies, the importance of people-to-people, you know, personal relationships, periods of studying in Australia, how that sort of ignites a passion and an interest. So in the whole, the members of the Association of Australian Studies here in Japan are Japanese, and they generally hold their meetings and their scholarly exchanges in Japanese. There are Japanese language scholarly journals that deal with Australian literature and culture.
I suppose it's appropriate that we're discussing literature here today, because Australian Studies across the world did grow out of the study of Australian literature.
Yes, it did, and I think that's because literature can really provide, I suppose, a window onto another society and ways of connecting and empathising with that society. And I think that the Maloof novel, Remembering Babylon, I've spoken to a number of Japanese colleagues here, and their sense is that it actually raises issues of identity, I think both in a specific Australian context, but it's those universal values that I think make literature such an important cultural force.
Well, as you and I both know, one of the ways in which Australian Studies has grown is that people who were teaching English literature in universities looked at British literature and American literature, and then discovered that there was literature coming out of Canada and New Zealand and Australia and South Africa, and variously became interested in those countries. And the people who became interested in Australian literature then wanted to know more about the culture that had produced these works. And that's really how the discipline has become, has established these kind of nodes all around the world.
Yes, that's right. And I think, you know, it's about, having imagination gripped by literature, or sometimes film, I think, works in the same way, and possibly film has now for a younger generation as much a hook into a society as literature. But that then leads on to questions of wanting to understand a society, its subtleties, where it came from, I suppose its background. And again, I think that one of the, if we look at recent contemporary Australian literature, there has certainly been quite an interest in probing Australians' past and its colonial past. And I think for other societies like Japan, that gives an insight into the history, into the background of contemporary Australia.
Well, we'll leave it there. Ambassador, thank you for joining us.
No, pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you to you too, Kate.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Michael.
On Books and Arts Daily, we've been talking about a new series of contemporary Australian literature in translation in Japanese with Australia's ambassador to Japan, Bruce Miller, and to Australian studies expert, Professor Kate Derrien-Smith from the University of Melbourne.